Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Vernon Nelson with Vermont Department of Health. This afternoon, we're going to talk about the asbestos and lead regulatory program, but specifically lead in construction and the role of town health officers. This is going to be presentation one of two presentations because I'm saving the asbestos in construction issues for another presentation because it's a bit too much information to put into a 10-minute presentation. So we're going to spend about 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes here, just with the information I'm going to discuss with you, and then we'll have some opportunity for some questions and answers afterwards, okay? The presentation topic today is what you should know about lead in construction, specifically the effects of lead exposure, the role of town health officers related to lead in construction issues, construction and compliance issues, just to give some general overview about that, and to also discuss some issues to give you more familiarity with the various rules and regulations regarding lead. I'll give you a brief overview. Next slide. We're going to start with the brief overview of staff personnel, if you are viewing the slides. And again, I'm Vernon Nelson, the program manager for the Asbestos and Lead Regulatory Program, and there's two other staff members that you should be familiar with. Lindsay Wells is the program specialist. She's responsible for licensing and certification processing. And Andrew Cheverfields is the program engineer, and Andrew is responsible for lead abatement permit reviews and issuing compliance inspections and providing technical assistance. Next slide. Effects of lead exposure. We're talking about the ingestion or inhalation of lead as it affects children and adults. It can cause adverse impact on the brain, kidneys, and nervous systems. It can slow down growth and development. It can damage hearing and speech. It can cause behavioral problems, as well as numerous other adverse health effects, which we won't go into in this presentation because we could spend a whole session on just health effects of lead. And I'm assuming you've gotten that already with previous presentations about lead. So, next slide. When can lead in construction be a problem? When it is associated with the use of the following prohibited practices on paint coatings in housing, public buildings, commercial, or industrial facilities: the generation of dust, inhalation or ingestion hazards, during pressure washings of paint coatings, dry or manual sanding and grinding, abrasive blasting activity, mechanical sanding and grinding, dry sweeping of paint chips and lead dust, as well as the use of heat guns and burning activity. Next slide. Why the concern about lead, and specifically lead in construction? Well, renovation or construction activity in pre-1978 buildings can create lead dust and chips. The purposeful and intentional removal of paint is considered abatement. Abatement must be conducted by a licensed abatement contractor. General renovation activities can disturb paint and must be conducted in a lead-safe manner by a certified lead-safe renovator. Now, next slide. When may town health officers encounter lead issues in routine duties? Well, you may get tips or complaints and public inquiries about construction or renovation projects. You may be asked to respond to rental tenant reports of suspected health hazards. You could also have inquiries from neighboring properties near renovation or construction projects. And construction activity in general in your town or municipalities could be associated with public buildings, and these could very well generate inquiries that you may have to respond to. Next slide. What is the town health officer role regarding lead-related tips or complaint? Well, in the Asbestos and Lead Regulatory Program, we basically want and ask you to provide assistance to us as a local presence to conduct an initial site visit associated with the tip or complaint, to be a set of eyes to provide some direct observation of site activities and conditions so that we're getting it from another health official rather than the tenant or some general person in the vicinity, to issue stop work orders and provide status reports to the health department, and to identify specifically the name of the property owner, the contractor who may be disturbing painted surfaces, or any specific information of that nature that would be useful for developing the file facts. Next slide. The asbestos and lead regulatory program staff may ask the town health officer to assist with investigating possible public health hazards or risk. The asbestos and lead regulatory program staff may ask the town health office to assist with investigating possible health hazards and risk within the municipality or town jurisdiction. We may ask you to take an action to prevent, remove, or eliminate such hazards. We may ask you to take an action to mitigate significant public health risk. We will ask for your assistance in enforcing health laws, rules, or permit conditions, and taking the steps necessary to enforce the orders. The local presence of the town health officer is an essential component of the public health team resources, and we really need your help. Next slide.
Excuse me, Vernon. Can I just ask that you please put your phone on mute? Thank you.
Next slide. We're asking for your help generally on a day one with occasional follow-up of a tip or complaint. And by this I mean on the day that we get an intake of a tip or a complaint into the Burlington Central office, we may give you a call to ask for your help as a local presence, because the sooner we respond to these things, the sooner we get correct facts and information. So on that day one, if we're in Burlington, perhaps you're in southern Vermont or an outlying part of the state, it's very useful to have a prompt response to get there fairly quickly. So we will be asking for your help on that. As deemed necessary or appropriate, program staff will arrange to travel to the site within 24 to 48 hours for follow-up compliance inspections when necessary. The asbestos and lead program staff will provide technical assistance to town health officers on an as-needed basis anytime. Just please call us. So we are available to you just like we're asking you to be available to us. Next slide. Useful tools for you to consider. We want to make this very simple. We're asking for your help to collect facts and information, and so the town health officer complaint inspection form is one very useful document that collects the names of who, what, why, and where, and you can add some comments to that form. We think you can get most of the information that we would be looking for you to gather for us on the form, but you could certainly provide any additional information you think would be relevant for developing the file. A digital camera is also very useful because a picture is 1,000 words, and so if you can take pictures of circumstances when you go to visit a site and transmit those to us electronically, that would be very useful. Your ability and authority to issue health orders is actually very useful, as well as stop action orders and cleanup orders on properties, because you actually have more authority than we do in the regulatory program and can actually initiate it much more effectively than we can in the asbestos regulatory program, because we have to go through some administrative channels to issue such orders, and yours is perhaps much more expeditious for getting right to the heart of a problem. Next slide. Town health officers should recognize practices associated with the essential maintenance practices, which you have had training on and you're familiar with, which is applicable to rental properties and childcare facilities. You should also recognize unsafe work practices, which I'll cover in a moment, and you should be familiar with renovation, remodeling, and painting, which is a new US EPA regulation that's going into effect April 22nd of 2010, which will affect all renovation contractors working on target housing. And you should be familiar with lead abatement, which is the removal, enclosure, or encapsulation of lead paint. The next slide. The laws and regulations regarding lead in construction are the Vermont's lead law, which is the essential maintenance practices law in the state of Vermont. We have also the Vermont regulations for lead control, which generally applies to lead abatement, inspection, testing, and training related to lead abatement and lead-based paint activities. Then we have the VOSHA lead in construction regulations, which applies to worker health and safety, not the general public, but worker health and safety. And then, of course, the new US EPA regulations for renovation, remodeling, and painting. Next slide. The Vermont Regulation for Lead Control, which is V.S.A. Title 18, Chapter 38, regulates lead-based paint activities, and it also applies to licensing and certification of individuals who perform lead-based paint activities such as inspection, training, testing, lead project design, and also abatement workers. It covers lead abatement in housing, commercial, and industrial settings. Next slide. Vermont's essential maintenance practices applies is designed to protect children and maintenance workers. It applies to houses and child care facilities built before 1978 and requires that anyone disturbing more than 1 square foot of paint on a house built before 1978 to use lead safe work practices, to not use prohibited practices, and requires the landlords and owners of child care facilities to keep their property in good condition by using essential maintenance practices. Next slide. This slide I've provided to you an overview of the US EPA renovation, remodeling, and painting rule that's going into effect on April 22nd, 2010. And also there's some phone contact information and web links there, because in the case of the health department, we will be making referrals when we get tips and complaints related to this rule to Region 1 US EPA. And in the cases of health officers, you can certainly contact us and we will make that referral or assist you with making that referral also. Next slide. Is lead paint present is a pressing question that we get oftentimes. And you should assume yes in all cases in homes or buildings built before 1978, because that's when essentially the lead paint was banned from use in residential settings. Unless it is proven otherwise, and this means there should be an actual report by a Vermont licensed lead inspector who says there's no lead paint. And that would be the only circumstance in which you would be able to have a decision that it's not a lead paint issue, when you've got that report on the material in question. Because oftentimes people will say, well, we know it's not lead paint. Well, that doesn't cut it. Next slide. What are lead safe work practices? Well, generally it is containing the work area with plastic sheetings as a barrier on the ground or windows and walls to prevent the dust from settling on a surface and making cleanup easier. It also involves misting painted surfaces before manual scraping or manual sanding. It also involves limiting access to work areas to basically the construction personnel only, and not allowing the public to go through these areas or occupants of the building. It also means wet paint, chip, and dust and debris before sweeping, and to clean up the work area on a daily basis. Next slide. The following work practices are prohibited unless approved by the department, and that is dry scraping, dry sanding, manual or machine, open flame burning or torch, heat guns above 1100 degrees Fahrenheit, abrasive blasting, hydroblasting or pressure washing, the use of methylene chloride for chemical stripping. Now, typically these practices would only be approved for use by a lead abatement contractor for use under a lead abatement permit, which will have had an approval by the department for a containment and a control plan. So when we say prohibited, we should not be seeing these practices being used by general construction contractors at all. And when it is used in a lead abatement permit, there is a containment and a control plan that the department has reviewed in advance and approved. Next slide. I've provided here resource and contact information For the health department, there's a toll-free number, which you can certainly use to call in, and the website for the health department for accessing related information on the website, but I've also provided the email address for myself, Lindsay, and Andrew, so that if you want to email us, please feel free. We are happy to communicate with you this way, and it's very efficient to communicate this way, and gives us a good record of documentation. And then I've also included the U.S. EPA's web link and the 1-800 number for getting information from the U.S. EPA. Now, that concludes the part of the presentation, and we can now go into questions and answers. Any questions?
Is it possible that a contractor or a painter, for example, would also be a licensed lead inspector? I've heard people say that. Is that a fact? This is Jay Carpenter from Grafton.
Hi, Jay. It's probably rare, and what I've experienced in a lot of calls, and some of yours are probably similar, when a person has, in the state of Vermont, has historically had the essential maintenance practice training class, the four-hour class for essential maintenance practice, they are sometimes under the impression that they are trained as a lead paint inspector, and they actually make the statement, and I get those calls myself, where they say, I'm a lead paint inspector, or I'm trained for lead abatement, and in reality, they've only had the four-hour class. So it is rare that you would have a painter or a contractor that's a lead inspector. I'm not saying it's impossible. It does happen in some cases, but I would say it's probably a person who's had the essential maintenance practice training in most cases.
Okay, because we always go out for a bid if the job's a certain amount of dollars. I'm a selectman also, and we've had one or two who say, yeah, well, we're also licensed to inspect for lead. You might not get that with another painter or another contractor.
That person is usually an essential maintenance practice trained individual. That's the four-hour class for essential maintenance practices, and that's only for rental property and child care. There is a general inspection component there for just the conditions of paint, but it is not for determining the presence of lead paint or sampling and analysis for lead paint.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
I have a question. You have, under useful tools for you to consider, you have health order, sub-action order, cleanup orders. I'm trying to understand. I think what you're saying is sub-action orders and cleanup orders. Are they separate, or are they under a health order?
They would be in the context of a health order. I was simply saying that you could issue a health order, for example, to cease and desist. Or you could issue a health order for a cleanup action. And so it would all be in the context of a health order. I was just trying to broaden it a bit to say that maybe we're trying to control certain kinds of activity here.
When would you consider it appropriate as an emergency health order? Perhaps a stop-action order, but not necessarily the cleanup order.
The stop-action is, usually we try to get voluntary compliance. If we ask you to assist and go out to a site, for example, the first step is to ask the contractor, when we recognize that you're using a prohibited practice, is to say simply, you've got to stop what you're doing, and you've got to modify your behavior now, because you can't continue your project doing it the way you are. If a contractor refuses at that point to stop, then we're left with no choice but to find some other means of getting him to change his behavior. And that's when we would have to think about a more formal action. But I think in most cases, if we can identify an inappropriate action, describe what the appropriate action is, give that person guidance, then we will be achieving a modification of behavior with, the diplomatic route. But if a contractor is belligerent and says, well, I'm going to keep pressure washing, or I'm going to keep burning, or whatever, you can't stop me, then we are left with no choice but to look for another mechanism to change that behavior. and that's when an emergency order or health order is appropriate. And I would make that decision or suggest making that decision based on the degree of exposure potential for public exposure, occupants, children, etc. If it's just paint chips on the ground and it's you can stop the work and then say clean it up, then that's not necessarily an emergency. But if we have a child playing in the construction area, or we have people walking through it every day, or we have it being washed down the street and going into the drains and going to the neighboring properties, we have to take a more aggressive action under those circumstances.
This is Rich Baker from Stowe. So this applies for indoor work too, right?
Indoor and outside.
So what role is the Department of Public Safety? I mean, as health officers, you know, we have a limited role dealing with construction. I mean, I guess what confuses me is why isn't this an enforcement issue for the Department of Public Safety, who does building inspection, versus health officers?
Well, that's a good question, Rich. I believe it could perhaps be something that could be referred to public safety if it fits better in that scenario for indoor, but I would have to get some additional interpretation of that. As I said, we would be asking you for assistance on day one to basically get some eyes and ears present with the circumstance to get the basic facts of what's going on and to see if we can get voluntary modification of behavior. But if it's an egregious situation, then you probably very quickly, beyond that day one assistance to us, move beyond what your best role is. And if it's an egregious situation, or we have a belligerent, non-cooperative contractor or property owner, then perhaps it is appropriate. Because, as I said, the program staff is going to try to move into this dialogue and exchange within 24 to 48 hours to put a little bit more muscle behind it, because we try to look for ways to encourage changing that behavior through voluntary compliance. But then the more resistance we get, then we have to look for other mechanisms, because as town health officers, you do have at your disposal the resources of law enforcement as well as the Commissioner of Health, and the Department of Public Safety would be in that realm as well when it is an egregious circumstance that warrants that kind of intervention.
Well, I'm confused on one thing, too. I mean, there was a seminar about 2 years ago where they had a conference-type thing, and in it that they made a big point about the health officers only are involved in public health hazards. And someone had mentioned, well, if a building's falling down, is that a public health hazard? You know, and they said, no, unless it's going to, like, fall on the road or something like that. So I don't quite understand, where's our jurisdiction with lead paint? I mean, that's not a public health hazard. I mean, if it's in the downtown, they're doing outside work, I can understand that's a public health hazard. But if someone is not following proper lead paint abatement on a house that's in the middle of, 20 acres, how's that a public health hazard?
Well,
I don't understand how we have jurisdiction at that point.
Well, on a house in the middle of 20 acres is one thing. I think the ones that I see most likely we're going to be called for assistance on are generally going to be rental housing or houses where there is close neighbors, where there's one party complaining about another, because that's the way the complaints come in to us.
Right. But I guess what I'm trying to understand, where is our jurisdiction? You know, when is something a public health hazard versus just not following the law? I mean, we don't have enforcement of the law. We have enforcement of public health hazards.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
I do understand that. And again, I wanted to make it very clear that we're not calling you routinely on every tip or complaint we get. It's
right.
Generally going to be a selective decision process when it involves neighbor against neighbor, rental tenant, on the sidewalk, the public building kind of scenarios. And those are generally the only times my program staff will be calling you. When it is a situation on a house in the middle of 20 acres and we get a bogus anonymous complaint from somebody that drives by, we're not calling you on that one from the Asbestos and Lead Regulatory Program. We're actually going to that site ourselves. And we're not calling you on the industrial construction project, and we're not calling you on the commercial building project. We're actually going to those sites ourselves.
Oh, okay. What kind of education program has there been for contractors and stuff? I mean, because, I mean, obviously, pre-1978, I mean, that's way, you know, many of the buildings in Vermont.
Well, in terms of education, there has been ongoing education for 10 to 15 years now, to the tune of greater than 10 to 15,000 people in the state of Vermont who've had essential maintenance practice training.
Right.
And so those parties, which are rental property owners and property maintenance persons, should certainly be aware. And in terms of the lead abatement regulations, we do outreach to these general companies and building owners whenever we see a major construction project that's going to impact lead paint, and we do direct outreach on those. And in general public education outreach, this with this new federal law, you will be seeing National Ad Council, radio, TV, and print ad activities during the month of March and April, educating the public about this new federal law. Of course, I want to reiterate, the state has no involvement or authority in, but you will see that information educating people about the requirements of this law. And there are quite a few people that are aware of the law now, and there are training events occurring on a monthly basis. I've seen approximately 15 to 20 courses for this new 8-hour training course that's scheduled in the next 60 days around the state.
Is that for the lead paint inspector?
That's for
8 hours?
No, that's for the lead safe renovator.
Oh, okay.
And so that training is taking place. And the federal government is also doing some educating and outreach through the Attorney General's office. There's some actions going on there for the state to do more assistance with the education and outreach. And I included that in this presentation because it's relevant to lead. And what this Lead Safe Renovation piece is doing is satisfying an area of construction that has essentially been somewhat void of clear and concise regulations, because we've had essential maintenance practices on rental properties and child care facilities, and we've had clear and concise regs on lead abatement, but we haven't had a lot of focus in the last 15 or 20 years on renovation. So this area has gone largely unmonitored, with little regulatory enforcement or compliance. And this effort that you're seeing now with the new laws from the feds is actually putting a focus on this much larger audience of renovation contractors that are disturbing paint and general construction.
So would most contractors then get a lead paint inspector? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
They will get they're going to an 8-hour training class to be trained as a lead safe renovator. And they will be registered in their federal database as a lead safe renovator, and that's an individual training. And each employer, that's a company entity or a sole proprietor that is contracting services in the state, must also register as a lead safe renovation entity or a business entity. So you have that entity and the individuals who are actually registering with the federal government.
Is there a chance the health department could put together a document that would say this is what is under Vermont law and what health officers deal with as a public health hazard issue with lead, and also what is going to be under this federal law that we don't deal with? Because I can just see a lot of confusion coming up with this new federal law and stuff that we don't have to get involved in.
I will take note of that. What's your name?
My name is Ellen Howard from Rockingham.
Hello, Ellen.
But I think, number one, there are very few people that know about this new law coming in effect April 22nd. I talked to a contractor one day, and his attorney caught him and said, have you heard about this? This guy is a very active contractor, hadn't heard anything. So I just think the publicity is too little too late, quite frankly, because you can't get that many courses, and to fit it in, you know, in the spring when everybody's going to start working, you know, to get an 8-hour day in for a class. But I also think it's really important to figure out what is the Fed's
responsibility, and we don't get caught into that.
Very well. I'll work on that for you, Ellen, and disseminate it to everyone. Any other questions?
One technical question. With this is more dealing with lead paint. When something is not painted but stained or a varnish of some type, do those have lead in them?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They have been found to have lead, not in all cases, but we have found clear varnish and shellac that has lead. Or if it was painted over a previously painted surface that had lead stripped, the lead is being detected still in the pores with a natural wood finish.
Okay, so like sanding old floors.
Exactly.
Would come in.
Exactly, and we're still finding the lead there. If you sand on something that's been stripped and the lead is still in the pores, you are still liberating dust that has enough lead concentrations to cause exposure. And as I said earlier, the only way to basically delist this lead question is to have a test result by a licensed lead inspector. That's very important because people oftentimes claim, I know there's no lead. Well, we can't work with that. We have to have something else.
What about if they had like siding replaced, you know, and they know the date of it or something? I mean, like we're brand new, you know, were they, you know, done new siding? I mean, would they still need to get a lead test? I mean, you know, someone resides the house and, you know, 10 years later they paint it and it's, you know, the re-siding was done in the 80s or 90s or whatever.
If the original construction of the house was pre-1978,
right,
you have to assume the way the law is written that it's lead paint without, unless you have test results saying that it's not.
Okay.
Any additional questions? Well, as I said, I've given the phone number and the email contact information. I welcome inquiries, calls, requests for technical assistance anytime with myself and the staff. Thank you very much for your time.